sales win rates have plummeted to a mere 17%, and outdated technology and tedious manual processes are to blame. Meanwhile, managers lack the visibility they need to hold their teams accountable. But imagine a world in which these crippling issues are solved automatically. Revenue.io automates the most frustrating parts of sales so reps can focus on what they do best, selling. Completely automate pre-call research, logging conversation data in your CRM, writing post-conversation recap emails, and prioritized outreach. And as reps book more meetings and close more deals, managers gain the real-time insight they need to scale what's working across their entire team. Ready to say goodbye to tedious sales processes and watch your win rate soar? Head over to revenue.io to learn more.
What's important to me is I look at my sleep for the day, and I know naturally, based off of my sales motion. Again, I'm in a different category, so I am not having to go bang on doors. I'm not necessarily recommending for an SDR starting out in their career, like, don't look at those sales metrics. I'm talking about, you know, once you graduate towards the enterprise strategic selling, you know, sort of your set account list. That's when I've taken a strategic focus and saying, hey, actually, it's more powerful for me to say no to things and let go of things. I actually create more abundance and capacity that way.
Hi, friends. Welcome to the Sales Enablement Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Paul. That was Brandon Fluharty. Brandon's the Vice President of Strategic Accounts at LivePerson. And today is a special Thanksgiving episode from our archives, a replay of one of our most popular episodes of the past year. And in this case, it's with Brandon Fluharty. So in this episode, I'm talking with Brandon, one of the very best SaaS sellers you'll find. And in our conversation, we're talking about the connection between your health and well-being in sales, and how those are tied to your ability to perform at your best, to be the very best version of you. So Brandon and I start by talking about why sellers should approach sales like an athlete. And then we dig into the four critical areas of your life that Brandon has identified that sellers need to monitor: your sleep, your skills, your strain, which is the amount of mental and physical efforts you're putting out, and your satisfaction. And if you imagine sort of a big Venn diagram with circles for each of those four, the intersection of those four where they overlap, well, that's success. So this is really the future, if not the present, of sales. You think about it like an athlete, as a performance-driven profession. And so the very successful seller understands that physical and mental well-being are essential to unlocking your potential to become the very best version of you. Brandon and I also talk about a new service he's launching for individual sellers, a health and wellness service for sellers, to improve their overall performance in life and in work. And it's called Be Focused, Live Great. So we'll get into all of this and much, much more. But before we get to Brandon, I want to remind you to subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to it. And if you subscribe, we'd certainly appreciate it if you could leave us a review and give us your feedback about how we're doing. So thank you. All right, let's jump into it.
Brandon, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Andy. Good to see you again.
Great to see you. Always good to see you.
Yeah.
So, for people who didn't catch your first appearance on the show, tell us what you do.
So my day job is...
Your day job.
My day job is as a strategic seller for conversational AI leader LivePerson. So we are a public company, about a $5.5 billion valuation. And I am out there talking to some of the world's largest brands, making it easier for them to communicate with their consumers.
And doing that via messaging platforms?
Yeah. So we make it very easy for them to utilize a tandem of automation with talent that they already have, whether that is someone in the retail store or the contact center. Mm-hmm. And we bring that together by connecting into all of the front ends that we're using as consumers. So that could be basic stuff like SMS texting, to more sophisticated things on social media like WhatsApp and Facebook Messenger.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be kind of crazy to communicate with a brand via WhatsApp.
Yeah, yeah. So book your flight to Miami, or be able to inquire about your bank balance, or be able to buy a car. Those are all experiences that we're powering through this idea of conversational commerce.
Right.
And we're sort of a leader in that category.
So, as you said, you work with big deals. People listen to the show before know we talked about this. I urge people to go back and listen to your prior episode here on the show. But, with big deals comes big stress. So, give us an example. Some of the deals size-wise and the companies that you sell to, if you can.
Yeah, sure. I can talk about a few of them publicly. So one of my first deals here at LivePerson was Delta Airlines. Mm-hmm. It was sort of a passion project of mine, having spent really just about, this is pre-COVID days, so just about every week in a Delta seat. Yeah. And, that was a multi-year deal, landed after about a nine-month effort from just kind of pitching and trying to open the door with them to actually closing that deal. Fast forward to today, three and a half years later, closing Fortune 10 level brands seven-figure sums.
Okay, eight-figure sums. So double-digit millions for people doing mm-hmm. the math. So as I was about to say, is with these big deals comes big stress, big pressure, because when you're selling deals that size for a publicly traded company, those move the needle as far as results go. And the way that oftentimes, if you're just a salesperson selling smaller deals, or even mid-sized deals, they wouldn't move the needle like that. So how do you deal with sort of the self-imposed pressure as well as the external pressures to sort of stay on an even keel, or do you stay on an even keel? I know you do. We know each other, so I can say
right,
that.
Right, yeah. Yeah, well, that's the biggest challenge right there, is staying even. And I think what I've learned after about 20 years of doing this, and it took that long to sort of figure this out, which is this idea of work-life balance is a complete fallacy. And I'm a big personal believer in work-life integration.
I agree.
Sales was always built for that. Mm-hmm. We have these labels in sales. You've got to be entrepreneurial. You need to operate like an athlete. Sales people are the athletes of business.
Right.
And so you're kind of asking yourself, well, do I need to be a generalist if I'm an entrepreneur, or do I need to be a specialist if I'm an athlete? And I think what I've come to the conclusion is you need to be a little bit of be flexible. I call mm-hmm. call it flexipline. This idea
I'm sorry.
I'm dropping new terms here, Andy.
Yeah. I'm not choking on the term. That was just purely coincidental. But go ahead and explain that for me. What spell it for me first? What is it?
Flexipline. That would be tough to spell for me, actually.
Oh, so it's discipline and flexible and discipline.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, okay. That's right. Yeah. So it's this idea of a balance between being disciplined and flexible. And so that kind of to me epitomizes what's been successful for me is mm-hmm. is that if I had the complete discipline of an athlete, that might take me so far, right?
Right.
And if I had the complete flexibility of being a generalist or a complete entrepreneur, that would be a separate path. And so I believe somewhere in the middle is the right balance if you're taking a paycheck from another company and you're trying to maintain that freedom and flexibility for yourself. Mm-hmm. So I think it's about integrating the best aspects of your personal life with your your work life and know that I can't just work 8 hours a day, call it quits, and then, you know, spend 8 hours of free time, hang out with the family, and then 8 hours of sleep. Yeah, I think in any modern role, that's a that's just a pipe dream, but especially in sales. So I look at it more about
innovation.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I remember posting something about this, and some people really objected to it. But yeah, I found through my own experience, both as an individual contributor who's closed eight-figure deals, as well as, you know, a team leader building teams and startups, and managing lots and lots of salespeople, is that I find that people that sort of more successfully integrate it always sort of have it in the back of their mind a little bit. I don't know, it's hard to completely shut off, but I found it actually sort of stress reducing to some degree that at one level I was always sort of ruminating on the big opportunities I was working on.
Yes.
Yeah. I wasn't stressing about them, but it was just getting myself the freedom and the flexibility mentally.
Yeah.
To sort of have it sitting in the back and that's when the ideas come, right? Like when the ideas pop in the shower.
Exactly.
Which is for me is the place they always happen. Is
yeah, for me it's on the bike.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tried that, but I can't remember anything I think about on the bike. By the time I get home, it's completely gone. Though I did stop today and sent myself an email in the middle of my ride, just so I remember this particular thought. But I just think that I agree with you. I think it's this integration. Yeah. It's a way you meld things together that, at least for me, was actually stress reducing, because instead of just turning it off.
Yeah.
And then coming back to the office and sort of saying, oh my God, what do I need to catch up on? Or what do I need to, it sort of had a little bit of additional thought going.
Yeah. And I think that's a great sign that it's okay to do that, especially if you enjoy what you do. And you can think about it. I mean, we should be thinking about and aspiring for big things. And these large transformational deals should occupy space in our minds. And it's okay to do that, not in a, like you said, a stressful situation. It should be almost stress reducing when you can step back and think about it in your personal quiet time. But with that said, I certainly agree that there need to be some guardrails. And and that's what I've learned to just integrate into my work and personal life, which is, you know, have a system in place. And there are two very simple things that have helped me, which is start my day the same way, my work day, and end my work day the same way.
And, so tell us what that means.
Yeah. So I like to start my day by just like an athlete would, you know, just get warmed up. Instead of jumping right in. And I think there's a lot of people who have different philosophies on that, but instead of jumping out in and tackling that big hairy task, I like to actually get my brain warmed up. And so I do things like, you know, just deep breathing. And it can be as simple as 5 minutes of deep breathing outside before getting into trying to harness something like a flow state. And then from there, the natural progression to me is picking up a book and reading, say, for 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then from reading, I like to listen. You know, so I'll listen to, whether it's a podcast, whether it's
this podcast for sure.
Yeah, of course. The Sales Enablement podcast. And then from listening, I like to get into writing and just a little bit of planning, a little bit of journaling, just get some thoughts out of my head. And then that for me primes my brain and I'm ready to work. And then, you know, ideally this is all done still in the quiet time of before the hustle and bustle. I try to do all of this in advance of, you know, any meetings and so forth. And then by the time the workday comes around, the true workday comes around, then I can tackle my biggest task before that first meeting. And then I'm off to the races and then I'm running. And then, as you know, especially in today's environment, virtual selling, 100% virtual selling, back-to-back Zoom calls.
Right.
That's when it's unpredictable. That's when, you know, you're disciplined. I like to think of it as a sandwich. I'm disciplined at the beginning of the day, disciplined at the end of the day, which I'll talk about that process, that routine in a minute. But in the middle is when you have to be flexible. because things are going to come at you 100 miles a minute, and you need to react, you need to respond, right. You need to be available.
Well, and listening to the routine, hopefully everybody has a morning routine,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, not mine, rocket science. Yeah, yeah.
Mine's different. I mean, I do like to read. I do write in the morning, though. Now I'm trying to finish this book. I'm writing all the time, but anytime I can grab some time. But having a routine is really important. And I always sort of look at it as in this, and it sort of makes sense in the context of what you were talking about too, with the various things you do. Is for me, sales has always been just a very creative profession, right? So, and for me, that's been one of the ways sort of, I guess, to manage stress is that I view it as such a creative outlet that, I'm always sort of looking forward to doing it, right? Yeah. Because it's fun when you take that approach to it. Doesn't mean there hasn't been stressful days and so on. We all have those. But I think that what you talked about is a good way to sort of exercise some creativity and prepare you so that when the day comes up, you're more prepared.
Yeah. And I think that's why you've been uberly successful in sales is because you looked at it as a creative position and role. And I think that's missed for a lot of people, a lot of folks. And today I'm seeing a lot of robotic motions for those getting into sales and you're probably seeing it. The technology's come, leaps and bounds since obviously we've started our careers, but
I started about the same time.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah. But there's no shortage in frameworks and processes out there. But at the end of the day, I think it really is about looking at this as a creative position and a creative role. And when you can allow yourself to have that creativity come around, that's what your routine should be geared towards. And again, I think that's just like any master crafts person, whether you're a musician, whether you're an athlete, I think everybody, sort of use their craft in the same way. And if we can elevate sales to that same height, that this is a craft to be honored and respected and it's creative. That's what your routine should be about, is harnessing that creativity. So you're excited to show up for the day and perform.
Well, I think that to your point about sort of the robotic motions is certainly there's a broad segment of leadership and sales that wants to use the technology to create sort of an assembly line in sales.
Yes. Yes.
And that's hard. This is an episode as part of our conversation in the month of May on mental health and wellness is sure. I mean, if you buy into that as a salesperson that, I'm buying into this process, I'm buying into this way of doing things that isn't creative and it's just sort of rote. I mean, I've worked in a factory. I've done assembly line work. I was actually sort of the opposite of assembly line. I was working in a slaughterhouse, but still was in a, we were taking things apart as well as putting them together.
Sure.
But nonetheless, it's the same thing day after day, hour after hour after hour. And if you sort of give yourself into that as a seller, you're buying into burnout.
Yeah.
I mean, why wouldn't you burn out on that? Because it's just, as I said, rote and repetitive. And I think that we instill that culture as leadership into people when instead we'd be much better served telling them, look, every situation is unique. It may have similarities, but this is again back where the creativity comes into play. Is that everyone you're dealing with is an individual and has their unique outlook, and what's important to them, most important to them, is unique. Lean into that.
Yeah.
And that's gonna keep you feeling better about your work than metrics driven robotic motions.
Yeah, unfortunately, this obsession for predictability has led to this robotic process that many sellers are caught in, and it's really up to the individual seller first to take ownership of that and realize, hey, I do have power here in crafting my day, because ultimately we can still have tremendous freedom in sales. And I think that's why we've all gravitated towards this as a career move. And by taking that ownership, kind of just putting, again, this idea of flexible and has worked for me, not being on either end of that scale, but try to find a middle way. You've got to put those guardrails on how you approach life and how you approach your work, and then allow some spontaneity, in your days, in your weeks, and in your deals. That's where that creativity can be harnessed, and you allow yourself to, find that novelty that we all crave as human beings, and not this burnout of the repetitive process of whether it's number of dials every day or emails or campaigns that get launched or whatever it is. Metric du jour is. Yeah.
we all know those are.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So you approach things, as you sort of alluded to earlier, as an athlete, right? Sales is the business athlete. You've got an athletic background yourself. Mm-hmm. And so you quantify a lot about yourself, right, in an effort to improve your performance. And you and I both share this passion for soccer, and the same team even. And in
just
soccer,
Liverpool FC.
Liverpool FC, right. And so in soccer, and I give this example all the time on the show, is they've gone so far with analytics because this is that is a performance based sport, right? Yes, it's a team sport, but they so closely monitor sleep, diet, recovery, every aspect of the player's skill, performance, and so on, in order to just get that extra bit of performance out of someone. And sales, just even though we have this data, we don't use it in a meaningful way to improve performance. Maybe we're not even, to your point, maybe not tracking the right performance because as individuals, there's so many of these four areas you talk about that are important to pay attention to. So let's talk about that. What are the areas you think are really important for sellers to pay attention to?
Yeah, I think that's a great question and something I've been actively exploring over many years, but particularly over the past year and a half. And I've completely ditched, but I've moved further away from the traditional selling metrics and moved much closer to holistic metrics that are actually tied very closely to my overall health. So my actually number one KPI that I've been looking at is my sleep. Not just amount of sleep, but sleep debt and managing sleep debt. And so I did an analysis, and it's not surprising because, again, pre-COVID, when you're jumping time zones on a plane every other week, you're in a different city, your circadian rhythm is certainly going to get skewed.
Right.
But I was, less than 6 hours of sleep a night, pre-COVID to now I'm averaging over 7 hours of sleep, and there's still room for improvement there. But my sleep debt rarely goes above three hours.
So what's a sleep debt mean?
Amount of sleep that your body needs based off of how much strain you've exerted for the day, and obviously just the amount of sleep that the human body needs versus how much actual sleep you've given your body. And so you accumulate debt on a daily basis, and And what the science tells us is that, you know, once you get over 5 hours of sleep, that particularly in sales, that's when your cognitive ability declines. That is when even your morality starts to get compromised, and you might, you know, fudge a deal. Tell a prospect, hey, we can do that. Let's get this deal done. Right. So when that starts to occur, you start to get into dangerous territory. And, you know, when I looked at my performance, you know, looking at this particular data with a lens on just my sleep data, was performing well. But, you know, I closed something like, you know, $20 million, you know, close to $18 million over a 2.5 year period, mm-hmm. total contract value, with sort of this lens on sleep. And then when I made a concerted effort to get into a better routine, reduce my sleep debt, keep it under 3 hours, I've closed over $25 million just the past 4 months alone. And that's been super impactful because I made a conscious effort to again, not focus on in the past, it would have been, okay, how many meetings do I need to have? How many, all the traditional sales metrics, mm-hmm. but I literally look at my biometric data and say, hey, this is something that's more important and meaningful to me because it's having a direct correlation. It's having a direct impact on my performance.
So let me ask the question, because this is fascinating stuff. So you don't, as a matter of which one of KPIs you prioritize, or you just aren't paying attention to some of the conventional KPIs any longer?
I really pay no attention to that anymore. I feel like what's important to me is I look at my sleep for the day, and I know, you know, naturally, mm-hmm. right, based off of my sales motion. Again, I'm in a different category, so I am not having to go bang on doors. You know, I'm not necessarily recommending for an SDR starting out in their career, like, don't look at their sales metrics. I'm talking about, you know, once you graduate, yeah. towards the enterprise strategic selling, you know, sort of your set account list. That's when I've taken a strategic focus and saying, hey, actually, it's more powerful for me to say no to things and let go of things. Mm-hmm. I actually create more abundance and capacity that way, because when my health is right, I know at every single engagement with a prospect or a client, it's going to go effectively. Whereas in the past, trying to work late on a proposal, work late on a presentation, get 4 hours of sleep, it's no wonder that my closing ratio was lower than it is today.
It's a fascinating perspective, though, when you think about it. And I think about it in the context of my career is sure. You know, I spent decades flying everywhere around the world, you know, being in sleep debt most of the time. Yeah. I was dealing with prospects. But this idea that, as a seller, you could look back and say, wow, maybe some of these places or these instances where I didn't perform up to snuff, where I misspoke, where I didn't draw the right connection between two points, I didn't synthesize what the customer is saying me into a coherent thought back to them to give them a good idea how to do something differently, because I wasn't sleeping enough.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sort of, I don't know, sort of sobering to think about it that way is that it could be something. But just so you know, I'm not being skeptical. I actually believe this. I actually think this is the type of thing that we should be doing from a wellness perspective for sellers, is emphasizing that there are things outside of what three words are you using at this point in time in the conversation, or what your subject line on your email is that, when you have a conversation with someone, are you at the point where you can perform to the best of your ability?
Yeah. And just by having sleep as a foundation, you know, there's all of these ancillary benefits, just general happiness, right?
Yeah.
You know, and we know, depression, is impacting it, what impacts sellers 2 to 3 times more than the average person. We're just already, we inherit a stressful role. It's there's a demand for predictability in a very unpredictable role. So we have to carry that stress around for, and by making sleep a foundation, you at least eradicate a lot of that physically, psychologically, emotionally. And using that as your foundation, you're at least on solid ground starting your day. And then by, you know, coupling that with something that's also been really important to me, I've really tried to understand, when do I perform the best? And I think in this virtual, 100% virtual environment that we've all been exposed to over the past year and year and a half, this has been a good opportunity to experiment. And I've found that I'm not quite a night owl. I am not quite a morning person or a lark. Mm-hmm. I'm sort of somewhere in between. And so by adjusting my schedule where I can do my peak activities earlier in the day, maybe schedule my meetings out a little bit later, later in the morning, and you know, allow myself to manage the afternoon dips and lulls that we all face, and then come back for more of that creative work during the rebound, that has worked wonders for me too. So those sort of two efforts, focusing on my sleep and you know, focusing on when I do things, not just what I do, but when I do them, have been sort of this unlocking of a treasure trove of great performance, and it's reflected in the results.
Yeah, for people listening, this idea about chronotypes, as Dan Pink categorized them, and in his book, When. Dan was on the show. You have to go, I don't know the episode off the top of my head, but go to ringdna.com, look at our podcast list, and you'll see the episode with Dan. Fascinating conversation, because, and I also, again, a believer in this, is that there are times of day for certain tasks. And again, from the interest of our wellness, you know, if we're working against ourselves, creating more stress is really what you're talking about, is how do we how do we make this all work for us, not against us?
Yeah.
And so let me ask a question about sleep and sort of stuff in general, is how are you tracking that, your sleep? Yeah. Because I imagine you got your Apple Watch or some sort of wearable, or actually multiple wearables, I imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, I do kind of geek out on this. So I do wear three different wearables. Apple Watch. Yeah. So I do have my Apple Watch, but it's not so much for sleep. I do wear a Whoop on my wrist. Whoop, you know, is a good commercial grade sleep tracker. And I do wear an Aura ring. So I have my ring, my Apple Watch, and my Whoop. So go all in on that. And really, it's more about experimenting for me. I mean, that's why I wear three of them.
Right.
And it connects into the apps that mean things to me.
Do you do anything? Do you have like a pre-sleep routine? I mean, meditation, edibles, whatever.
Yeah. you know, funny enough, you know, cannabis actually helps I get higher quality sleep, you know, according to Whoop, when I track, because there's a journal function. You can track cannabis, marijuana, whatever it is in there. Mm-hmm. And actually there is a benefit, a negative effect with alcohol. Even with a glass of wine the next day, you know, Whoop recovered, you know, you get something called a recovery score. Whoop has sort of red zone, yellow zone, and green zone. And almost always after just a night of a drink or two, always in the red. So completely eliminate alcohol during the work week. That's been one massive change. The effects of caffeine, measuring that, again, just gives me great visibility, particularly Whoop, around these behaviors. So I try to eliminate caffeine 10 hours before bedtime. That's had a very positive effect. Mm-hmm. Trying to close out work 2 hours before bed. So really just not looking at any emails or a screen has been extremely helpful. 3 hours, try to, you know, no more food. So just being able to digest my food and have plenty of time before bed. That window is usually about 3 hours. And then an hour before bed, just no more screen time. So that's when I switch over to just putting the phone, flip it over, blue light glasses even, if I am going to just set my alarm on my phone and grab a book, turn down the lights, try to relax a bit. Hot shower helps. And even, you know, 20 milligrams of melatonin about a half hour before bed. And that, mm-hmm. that seems to really be a great wind down routine for me.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, I have to read all my books on my iPad. So
at least put the blue light blockers on.
Yeah.
I've
got the blue light glasses, all that. Yeah. I mean, I don't have any problem falling asleep.
Yeah.
And I don't wake up really in the middle of the night. I just don't sleep for a long time. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, 6 hours is sort of like standard.
Yeah. Right?
If I have one of those days where I get 7, it's like, man, I feel so sluggish, especially if I'm like getting out to go for a run or getting my bike. It's like,
interesting. Okay.
Yeah. But yeah. Just as it's breaking the routine, but it's,
yeah,
it's,
right.
But I'm getting into this. So I got one of these, 8 sleep, you know, mattress covers with the cooling zones. Cause yeah, my wife sleeps, you know, she's always cold and I'm always hot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And even if the air conditioner's on, you know, I can wake up hot.
Sure.
So yeah, one of my guests on podcast, Eric Sue, said, oh no, you gotta get one of these things. He shares sort of your outlook in terms of quantifying things and tracking. We just got it. Going to install it tonight. We'll see.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I've heard very good things, but I haven't gone that far myself. But I am interested. You'll have to let me know how it goes.
Yeah. Well, I just find that I'd like to sleep better, right? Feel more rested.
Yeah.
For
sure.
And I do some tracking.
Yeah.
I need to do more.
But I think you bring up a good point. I think another passion that we share is cycling and this idea of incremental gains. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you can improve, you know, just 1% of every part of your life, and I think that sums up a lot about what we're talking about. It's with that work life integration for sales. If your life is good, just like for a professional athlete, professional cyclist. Your life is good. You're going to perform well on the bike. You're going to perform well on the pitch, mm-hmm. and sales.
Right.
And so I think we need, again, taking ownership as an individual. You need to take ownership of all of that. You know, you need to take ownership of, you know, how am I sleeping? How am I preparing myself to feel and be creative? And how am I, you know, what am I putting in my body? And the aggregate of all those things will help rise you, it'll lift you up as an individual to perform better. And then that naturally helps with your overall satisfaction, happiness.
Right.
So they're all integrated.
Yeah, well, somebody asked me not that long ago, I was encouraging them to hire older salespeople, mature salespeople, people in their 40s and 50s. And they were saying, well, actually, there weren't that many to choose from, right? That they were sort of looking. And so the question was, why are there so few older salespeople? And I think this is what you're talking about, something that's so important for people, first 10, 20 years of their career, is that, A, you're going to work longer than this current mm-hmm. generation. You may think you're not going to, but you'll want to. By the time you get to that point, you all work longer. And I think the reason there's so few are so few older salespeople is the people who didn't learn how to manage the stress, didn't learn how to manage the environment that they work in, switched to other careers.
Yeah.
I think the value of what you're talking about is this, these are tools that we can all use that are commercially available off the shelf, whether it's a Whoop or some other fitness tracker or these sleep aids that like Eight Sleep that comes with an app and that you can track sleep on use it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. And I think, sales is one of those weird roles and careers where you don't get any formal training. It's training on the job. And so we have to figure these things out. And like I said earlier, we have all these different labels and we have to manage the stress. We have to manage the constant demands on our time and produce results. And that's not for everyone. It's hard to manage, but that's equal to like I was saying earlier in other areas where you hone a craft. There is stress to be a performer on stage. There is there's a stress to perform well as a professional athlete. And I think that's my ultimate North Star, is to finally see a world-class sales organization matching the everything that goes into building a world-class professional sports team. And it's looking at everything beyond just what delivers results, which is this obsession on sales metrics. No, it's actually these other things. And I'm starting to go as far as to say, it's actually, if you focus on those other things as the primary, that's what's going to lift the sales metrics and the sales results. And I think that's the shift. And it's really been this past year with this, with the pandemic, the macro event that I think has brought that to a head. And we've reached a bubble where it just can't be tolerated anymore, where mental health needs to be taken seriously, particularly for sellers. And I think that there's going to be, a more natural inclination to adopt, this philosophy, adopt these tools, and integrate them in a much more holistic approach. Because if you are, feeling good as a human, you will naturally be a better seller. We need to take care of the human first.
I agree. I mean, there was this great quote from not surprisingly, a soccer coach, a big club in Europe. And they're talking about how they bring people into their organization, new players into the organization. And they said, well, we spend a few months and we train the person before we train the player. And it was these things, right? It's not just the importance of the disciplines of sleep and nutrition and so on, and mental well-being, meditation, so on, but just, interpersonal skills, right? Mm-hmm. How they deal as part of a team, how they deal as part of an organization. These things that we assume that people know, right? We assume that people, what you're talking about, that people know that sleep is important.
Yeah, right.
But do they really? Not really, right?
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
So. Yeah. We never teach them. So let's give them the information. If we think this is important for performance, which I believe it is, and it's just one of a number of things, is let's teach it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I sort of focused on the human skills part of it is we should be training sellers on empathy.
Yes.
On how to form a relationship.
Yes.
We assume people come into the workforce with these basic skills. And some do, but oftentimes many don't.
Yeah.
And they come into sales and we train them up to within an inch of their life on, our process and cold call, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And wonder why they're not hitting it.
Yeah.
And it's because we've overlooked maybe the most important part.
Yeah. Yeah. You're a human being first. And just aligning to simple things like being an extrovert or an introvert. It's not to say that you can't be a good seller in either of those personality types, but just by understanding and better aligning to that personality type or your chronotype, digging a little bit further and not assuming that every person is the same and can be given a script and can be given a framework and metrics and just say, hey, we're going to train you against this and expect, you know, 20%, you know, delivers to our top line, you know, and the 80%, you know, good luck figuring out, you'll churn and burn and we'll just get somebody else in and replace you. I think it's just that approach is just so archaic and like I said, you know, so many societal issues and world issues coming to a head that I think companies are starting to finally embrace the need to look at the human first. But you're absolutely right. We have so much room for improvement there, and just little simple things of yeah.
Well, but I also think it goes both ways, though, right? I mean, if we train people on some of these things we're talking about, and give them exposure to it, and let's again go back to empathy for a second.
Yeah.
If we educated sellers about what empathy really was,
yeah,
then it would open their eyes to a larger group. If they understood the impact of sleep debt, and they were, you know, forming a connection with a new buyer, and the buyer's, oh, no, I've got a young child, and we just didn't sleep last night. You might do something differently in that call because you would have the empathy for, and you'd understand why they're feeling the way they do, and that could inform your actions. But again, we just make this giant assumption that either people know, or the assumption is we just don't care, right? Leadership in general, most enterprises don't care. As long as we get enough out of sales, that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, if we actually took the time to carve the edges on those simple things that, you know, with the human in mind first, the person first, seller second, it'd be amazing to see what the sales results would be. And I think you're absolutely right that, you know, most companies, if not all companies, just don't have the patience or take the time or the foresight to see that. And it, you know, it takes these kinds of conversations. And that's what I'm passionate about, is starting with conversations. More of these conversations need to occur to drive the awareness before you can build a community around this level of insight and this different type of approach. It's really, it shouldn't feel different. This right. should be, yeah, the way we should be approaching, you know, just
right.
work so, as a seller.
So let me ask you, you've got a side hustle going that's addressing this idea of wellness for sellers. So tell us about that.
Yeah. So it's very much a long-term project, and I look at it in steps and phases that need to occur. It's called Be Focused, Live Great. Mm-hmm. And it's very symbiotic with my day job, and in the sense that I'm experimenting with myself, and then I use social media to share my insights and share the results of my experiments. And you know, luckily things have been going well, where I can draw a direct correlation by saying, hey, I've deliberately started focusing on these elements of my life, like sleep, prioritizing wellness. Mm-hmm. And my sales results have dramatically increased because of that. And so it you know, that's been step one, is sort of communicating that out to the world. And the second phase will be about building connections around that. And mm-hmm. and I know there are others who feel the same way and are very similar, want to geek out on things like wearables and draw those same correlations of like, oh, wow, if I change these habits, what would that impact be on my own sales?
Right.
And then, you know, finally, where this will ultimately go is building a community around that. And the goal is what we'll work on together is creating perhaps an app or digital product that we can all benefit from. Mm-hmm. And you know, I've been manually mapping out, you know, my sleep and my sleep debt, correlating that with productivity, correlating that with sales results. Can we all work on that together and then create a digital product that could be delivered to the world? And so that's what Be Focused, Live Great is all about. And it's an open call to all sellers who have a curiosity around this and want to maintain high standards and be a part of building something interesting and special.
Very cool. Yeah, very cool. I love it. I mean, for me, I've look at sort of the world and said, you know, we all inhabit multiple roles in our life, right? And in all those roles, there's two aspects to it. There's the human, and then there's the role we fill.
Yeah.
And for us to be good at any of those roles, and that could be partner, spouse, you know, husband, wife. It could mm-hmm. be, you know, coach of a kid's team. It could be whatever you're doing on the side. It's your job. You got to be a good human first.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very interesting.
Pretty simple concept, but and what I have found is that it's like a woodpecker needing to chip away at the wood before breaking through to the light. And it's certainly been an evolution for me and a journey. But it took a deliberate effort. It took us, you know, me taking a stance and saying I was always interested in this stuff, but the quiet time, the forced quiet time of this past year was really the opportunity for me to say, okay, finally, now is the time where I'm going to make a conscious effort in tracking all this. And it wasn't tracking for the sake of more data. We don't need more data, but it was tracking for the sake of uncovering compelling insights. Again, not as a seller, but as a human being.
Right.
And optimizing myself, you know, for the human element, correlating that with sales, it's been a fascinating discovery, and I want to share that with the world. I want to communicate and build connections around people who are interested in doing the same, because I think it can have a major impact on yourself as an individual first and foremost, but an organization who wants to take a more humanistic approach to their sales organization.
Yeah, I mean, you're no disagreement here. Yeah, I've, as I've just said, firmly believe that we're much better off training the human aspect of things first and then worry about skills and competencies later. Because, you know, in my mind, there's only four competencies you need to have to succeed at sales. You know, you need to be able to connect to someone, you need curiosity, you need understanding, you need to be able to listen to understand, and you need to, I call it be generous, but you need to be able to give value and acumen to people that need your help. So, beyond that, if that's the one thing you need to be really good at, those are the things you'd be really good at, and start with that as your platform. And then, everything else
falls into place.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
All right, Brandon. Well, thank you so much for joining me. For people follow you, I presume LinkedIn is the place to do that.
Yeah, LinkedIn absolutely is the best place to follow me. And then if there is anyone interested in learning more about Be Focused, Live Great, it's simply BeFocusedLiveGreat.com.
Excellent. All right. Well, as that gets more launched, we'll have you back. We'll talk more about this.
Awesome. Sounds great. Look forward to it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Andy.
Okay, friends, that's it for this episode. First of all, I want to thank you for taking the time to listen. As always, I'm so grateful for your support of the show. And I want to thank my guest, Brandon Fluardi, for sharing his insights with us today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to this podcast, Sales Enablement with Andy Paul, on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And thank you so much for investing your time with us today. Until next time, I'm your host, Andy Paul. Good selling, everyone.
Hey, sales strategists. At Revenue.io, we're not just imagining the future of sales, we're building it. We offer the world's most complete platform for revenue teams, and we're featured in the most recent Forrester Waves for both sales engagement and conversation intelligence. With Revenue.io, you can slash call prep time to seconds, guide your reps in real time to have more successful conversations, and after calls, we generate ready-to-send recap emails so sellers can keep deals soaring toward the finish line at light speed. See the future of sales now at Revenue.io.